Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, December 3rd, 2023. Your reader is Trevor, and I'll be reading you the Sunday and Saturday Sioux City journals for today. Let's look at the front page of Sunday's paper, where we look to the NAIA-FCS quarterfinals between Northwestern and St. Xavier. Headline, Girard's touchdowns lead Northwestern to win. Subheadline, wide receiver scores twice in second half as Red Raiders advance. From Orange City, Iowa. Northwestern College head football coach Matt McCarty and his staff bet on Austin Girard, and it paid off on Saturday. But by no means are the Red Raiders ready to cash in on their bet. McCarty sees much more to come from the freshman wide receiver from Gilbert, Arizona, who missed last season on a medical red shirt after tearing his ACL. Quote, I'm so excited for Austin, McCarty said, to see him make those big plays for us. He's a kid where we were really, really excited about last year, but he had the injury. He made huge plays for us today that broke the game open for us. Quote, he's a special player and a great competitor. We have a really good group of kids from the area that really fit who we are. After both Northwestern and its NAIA quarterfinal opponent, St. Xavier, struggled offensively in the first half, on Saturday on Corver Field at Dave Velos Stadium in Orange City, Northwestern quarterback Jalen Gramstead found Girard for two second-half touchdowns as the top-ranked Red Raiders blew past the number 12 Cougars by a 34-17 final. Quote, we are hungry to come out here, Girard said. Quote, it's an honor to play for this team. There's been a lot of hard work put in coming back from injuries and getting to this point. I didn't have a lot of opportunities coming out of high school, and Coach McCarty made a bet on me. Quote, we all have a good relationship off the field, and I think that correlates to what we do on the field. Northwestern 13-0 will host a semifinal game in Orange City next Saturday at noon against Georgetown after the Tigers beat Indiana Wesleyan. Girard's two scoring catches were his only receptions, but both were difference makers in the game. St. Xavier quarterback Stuart Ross was picked off by Northwestern junior defensive back Cody Moser on a remarkable play where Moser not only had to adjust to the pass being deflected in traffic in front of him, but also stay in balance as the Rock Valley alum's momentum was carrying him out of the back of the end zone. It was Moser's 10th interception of the season, which ties a school single-season record. Northwestern capped off an 80-yard drive with a 34-yard scoring toss from Gramstead to Girard to put the Red Raiders up 20 to 10 with 30 seconds left in the third. After St. Xavier returned the ensuing kickoff 70 yards for a touchdown, the Red Raiders capped off 8-play, 89-yard drive with a 27-yard touchdown pass from Gramstead to Girard. Gramstead added a rushing score from 9 yards out to solidify the win, putting the final points on the board with an Eli Stater extra point with just over 6 minutes left in the fourth. After the size exchange, first quarter goals, a 30-yarder from Stater and a 37-yard kick from St. Xavier's Peyton Baines, Northwestern senior running back Connor McQuillan sprinted 47 yards on the second play of the second quarter to put the Red Raiders up 10-3. St. Xavier answered when Ross found Justin Pringle, who also had the kick returns for a score, for a 6-yard passing touchdown to tie the game at 10-10 before halftime. Quote, at halftime, we just talked about coming out in the second half and playing our game, said McCarty, who's in his 8th year as Northwestern head coach and guided the team to a national championship to end last season. Quote, we played with more physicality, wanted to play more on our teams to give ourselves a chance to play next week, end quote. Northwestern took a 3-point lead midway through the third on a 40-yard field goal by Stater, and Northwestern handily controlled the game from there on out. Gramstead ended the game 14 of 18 passing for 217 yards and added 48 rushing yards on 19 totals. Nearly half of McQuillan's rushing yards came on his score as he finished with 99 yards on 21 carries. Quote, Jalen did a great job of keeping plays alive with his feet and fighting receivers down the field, said McCarty. Senior Michael Story, the school's all-time leader in catches, made 6 catches for 72 yards. Quote, we were confident we had the better team today, Girard said, so we wanted to come out in the second half and punch them in the mouth a little bit. This team is really good when faced with adversity. For the Cougars, Ross completed 23 of 38 passing attempts for 183 yards, but threw the interception to Moser and was sacked 5 times. Quote, "It means a lot to be a part of this team, a part of this defense," said sophomore defensive lineman Jacob Dragsta, a Unity Christian alum. Quote, "We take a lot of pride in what we do, and that comes from the coaches on down. Each part cares about everyone else. Sometimes certain units struggle, but nobody on this team points fingers. We're in it together as one team." In total, Northwestern outgained St. Xavier by nearly 100 yards, that being 391 to 281. Quote, "If it comes down to our players, that in the trust they have in one another," McCarty said, "they know the different playmakers step up in different games. But we talk about controlling what we can control and not worry about things we can't control. We're focused on staying present and winning the moment." All right, let's now turn to the next headline on the front page of today's Sunday paper. Headline, "Educators, legislators talk ESAs, teacher pay," from Sioux City. Public education officials from the Sioux City metro area had the chance Saturday morning to voice concerns and priorities they have for the coming year to a panel of Iowa state legislators. For nearly an hour and a half, Iowa state representatives Jacob Bossman, Republican of Sioux City, Bob Henderson, Republican of Sioux City, J.D. Scholten, Democrat of Sioux City, and State Senator Rocky DeWitt, Republican of Lawton, fielded questions on educational savings accounts, salaries for public school teachers, early child care, and more. In his opening remarks to the legislative panel, Sioux City Community Schools Superintendent Rod Earlywine said teacher recruitment and retention continue to be major issues for the district. Earlywine later took aim at the 2023 state law that created educational savings accounts, or ESAs, which allow families to use public funds to pay for private school tuition. He said the program is already over budget because of an unexpected number of signups, and critics have suggested covering the difference could hurt the public education system. Quote, "There is more than funding that goes into decisions that help schools," Henderson said in further discussion on the matter. Henderson then suggested the number of people utilizing ESAs in the future years could wane. With respect to teacher recruitment and retention, Bossman said those matters have lingered since he's been in the legislature. One suggestion he had was potential recurring bonus to public school teachers' salaries. Henderson mentioned a similar idea and proposed an expedited process of teacher licensure for individuals looking to make career changes. Sioux City School Board member Dan Greenwell said under current law, the state of Iowa would require that someone from the business sector looking to switch to education and teach accounting or financing would need to have a master's degree in business administration. Quote, "If you don't make as many teachers, there won't be as many teachers," Greenwell said. To further fill open teaching positions, educators and legislators discussed the idea of providing stipends to student teachers who want to work in the public education system. Such a practice is not currently allowed in Iowa. DeWitt said he would be in favor of such a measure. Earlywine also chided the legislators' passage of Senate File 496 on GOP votes, which prohibits books that include descriptions or depictions of any of a list of defined sex acts from public school libraries because of the lack of guidance from the Iowa Department of Education on how to comply with the law signed by Republican Governor Kim Reynolds. Quote, "Now we are spending time, effort, energy, and valuable resources to defend a law that's passed, and we try to make sure we're following the law, and then we get included in a lawsuit," Earlywine said. Thursday, the district was one of a number of local school districts named in a lawsuit which argues that the restrictions on the books imposed by Senate File 496 are overbroad and an unconstitutional restriction on speech and the right to receive information. None of the members of the panel directly addressed the lawsuit during the open discussion. When first speaking to the education officials gathered, Scholten said both parental care and child care are top priorities for him in the coming legislative session. Quote, "I don't necessarily have an agenda because I'm working across the aisle on everything," said Scholten, the lone Democrat in the Northwest Iowa legislative delegation. Earlywine said that if people have to pay high costs for child care, that keeps people from entering the workforce. Scholten asked what might make sense to address the issue, and Earlywine pitched the idea of all-day, everyday preschool offered by the public school system. Following the meeting, Earlywine said if early child care or ESAs or teacher salaries, what's said about the issues in a forum is not the same as what follows when legislators have a real chance to address such matters. Actions speak volumes, he said. So if their actions are supportive of public schools, I think that sends the message. All right, let's now turn to the inside pages, or page A2 of Sunday's paper. Headline, DeSantis, Democrats want to run against Trump. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis unleashed a volley of criticisms at former President Donald Trump during the opening of his presidential campaign office in Sioux City on Saturday. DeSantis, who's competing with Trump in the 2024 Republican presidential primary, alleged the Democratic Party wants to run against Trump in next year's general election, and that even if Trump were to win, his time in office will be spent focusing on his own concerns. Quote, they have a playbook they will use, and unfortunately it will work, DeSantis said of the Democratic Party's plans for a race of Trump. The Democrats are telling us who they want to run against. The media is telling us who they want to run against. And so the question is, as Republicans, are you going to do what the media wants? Are you going to do what the Democrats want? Another Trump critique DeSantis has had on the campaign trail is that the former president would only be able to serve one more term in office if he were to beat President Joe Biden. Quote, we need somebody that can serve for two terms, DeSantis said. Quote, because if you don't do two terms, you can do some good things, and if Democrats come in, they're just going to reverse it. And so we can't let that happen. We need somebody like President Reagan. When he came in, not only did he change the trajectory of the country, we did really lasted far beyond his tenure in office. While trying to make his case about who the other side will prefer in 2024, the two-term Republican governor said Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor of California, cited Trump favorably to wield against DeSantis during a Thursday night debate between the two state chief executives. After the campaign event ended, DeSantis said he took the opportunity to debate Newsom, who is not running for president in 2024, to articulate conservative principles. Quote, talk about how freedom works and show the success of Florida, and also paint the picture of what the country would look like if the Democrats were able to adopt California policies nationally. Throughout his Sioux City stop, DeSantis, who is more than 25 points behind Trump in 538's average of Iowa polls, criticized the state of California, taking particular issue with the state's embrace of renewable energy sources and its handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. The former three-term congressman suggested California dealt with rolling lockouts because of the adoption of solar and wind energy. However, ABC News reported another driver of a 2022 blackout in the Golden State was the breakdown of several plants, including natural gas-fired ones. The ABC News story did note, too, quote, the solar supply decreases towards the end of the day, prompting the calls to reduce energy use after 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. There can also be uncertainty of solar supply due to factors such as cloud cover and smoke from wildfires as the state battles several blazes. As for California's COVID-19 response, DeSantis alleged the state's lockdown measures had an impact on the so-called deaths of despair. Quote, they are locked out of opportunity, DeSantis said, and nobody's been held accountable for any of this. So we're going to bring a reckoning to Fauci, the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, because we can never let this happen to our country ever again, he said. Per the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, California's suicide rate in 2020 was over 10 per 100,000 people, for 4,144 total. In 2021, the number was 10.1 per 100,000 people, 4,148 altogether. Those figures for Florida were 13.2 per 100,000 in 2020 and for 3,135 total, and 14 per 100,000 in 2021 for 3,351. The DeSantis campaign is the first to hold an event for the opening of a presidential campaign office in Sioux City this cycle. With an appearance in Jasper County Saturday afternoon, the DeSantis campaign becomes the first to hit all 99 counties in Iowa for the 2024 GOP primary. The planned stop had scheduled speeches from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, family leader, president, and CEO Bob Vander Plaats, a Sheldon, Iowa native who served as the principal at Marcus Meridian Claiborne High School and the Sheldon High School, as well as Iowa House District 17 Representative Matt Winchittle and the Iowa District 29 Rep. John Dunwell. All right, let's now turn to the next story on page A2 of Sunday's paper. Headline, Missing Rockwell City Man Found Dead. A missing Rockwell City man was found dead in a vehicle afternoon on a wooded abandoned property southwest of Jolly. At 1:35 p.m., 54-year-old Mark Edward Reisberg's body was found in a Chrysler PT Cruiser at 1710 230th Street in Street. Preliminary findings suggest Riseburg, who was reported missing on October 28th, suffered a single gunshot wound, according to a statement from the Calhoun County Sheriff Pat Riley. Quote, Riseburg's body has been sent to the Iowa State Office for the State Medical Examiner for autopsy. While investigations are ongoing, foul play is not suspected, Riley said in the statement. The statement indicated that the United Cajun Navy assisted in the response. The Louisiana-based nonprofit, which organizes search and rescue teams, has been in the area searching for another missing man, 53-year-old David Schultz of Wall Lake. Schultz, a truck driver, was last heard from in the early morning hours of November 21st, according to authorities. The United Cajun Navy announced on its Facebook page Thursday that it had covered close to 50,000 acres. At 10:30 a.m. on Friday, the United Cajun Navy resumed search operations for Schultz from its meeting location at the Sac City Motel on Ash Avenue. The motel is roughly 12 miles from where Riseburg was found dead. The Lakeview Police Department and the Sac County Sheriff's Office began an investigation into Schultz's whereabouts the afternoon of November 21st. Sarah Schultz, Schultz's wife, told the Journal his red truck was found the afternoon of November 21st northeast of Sac City. She said the vehicle was turned off, but it wasn't pulled over to the side of the road. The trailer was reportedly still loaded with young pigs. Schultz said there was no sign of her husband, but his coat was located in a ditch on the opposite side of the road. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation is assisting the Sac County Sheriff's Office and the Lakeview Police Department in the investigation into Schultz's disappearance. All right, well, we're kind of running out of content from the Sunday paper. Oh, I did forget, I am sorry, the weather forecast for the next 5 days. Some of that might be pretty important for a lot of you listening, so let's get that out of the way. Normally, I should do that first, but I forgot and jumped right into the story, so I do apologize. Siouxland's five-day forecast. For today, it'll be clouds and sun. Winds from the southeast, 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 39. Tonight, it'll be partly cloudy, with winds west-northwest, 6 to 12 miles per hour, and a low of 19 degrees. Monday, breezy in the afternoon, high of 47, low of 23. Tuesday, breezy of sunshine. Winds northwest, 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 44, low of 25. Wednesday, partly sunny and milder, high of 53, low of 31. And Thursday, mild with partial sunshine, high of 59, low of 32. So that's what we can expect the next 5 days. So let's now switch to yesterday's paper, or Saturday, December 2nd, 2023, for more content. All right, now looking at yesterday's, or Saturday, December 2nd's paper, we look to the Women's National Volleyball Tournament. Headline, Best Seed in the House. Subheadline, Veteran Line Judge Has Worked NAIA Tourney for a Decade. John Becker claims he's had the best seed at the NAIA Women's Volleyball National Championship Tournament for the past 10 years, and he doesn't even get to sit down. He's standing the whole time. When the tournament opened play for the 16th straight year in Sioux City on Wednesday, Becker was in a familiar spot, the intersection of the side and end lines on a back corner of the court at the Tyson Event Center. Red flag in hand, the veteran line judge crouched as the first serve crossed the net, prepared for the possibility that he'd need to make a call. Every serve, every hit, every time the ball crossed the net, Becker closely eyed the action that unfolded a few feet in front of him. Quote, I love being around the game. Standing on the corner is the best seat in the house, said Becker, a nationally certified line judge from Merrill, Iowa, who's worked as a line judge at every NAIA tournament since 2014. He's one of eight line judges, two per match, assigned to this year's tournament by Gene Ellis, a 51-year volleyball officiating veteran from Sioux Center, Iowa, who assigns the line judges at the national tournament. Each year, Ellis, who served as a line judge himself the first 4 years the tournament was in Sioux City, chooses line judges from a pool of interested officials. All are nationally certified and all love volleyball. Quote, we all have a passion for the sport, Ellis said. Becker's passion grew along with his daughter, Jess, who began playing club volleyball in fifth grade. As Becker watched Jess play countless matches through the years, his knowledge and enthusiasm for the sport grew. He began working as a line judge at high school tournaments and was first certified as a college line judge in 2012. After Jess, who's now 28, graduated from high school, Becker became a registered high school volleyball official and continues to officiate high school and club matches and work as a line judge in college matches throughout the region, including NCAA Division I contests at South Dakota and Iowa State. Every year, he submits his name to work at the NAIA tournament. With a close-up view of the action, there's no better way to experience the championship-level play. It's a lot of work, but it's really playtime for me, he said. I like going out there and having a good time and doing a good job for the players and coaches. Watch Becker for just a few minutes, and it's obvious he's having a good time. He makes eye contact with the line judge opposite him and exchanges smiles after a close call. He emphatically extends, raises, or waves his flag on every call. There might even be a chance to share a quick comment or a laugh with a player during a break in the action. He's got to enjoy those brief pauses because the line judge must focus on a number of things every time the ball is served. Line judges watch the server's feet to make sure that she stays behind the end line. There are touches at the net to watch for. Did the ball pass between the antennas on the hits at the edge of the net? Did a diving player get her hand under the ball before it hit the ground? Did the ball land in or out of bounds? Well, there's a lot you have to anticipate and be ready for, said Becker, who's been on the lines for 3 championship matches. There's always something that could go on. You can't follow the ball. You have to anticipate where it's going to go and get your eyes there first. To get his eyes ready for the match, Becker watches teams warm up, picking up hitting and serving tendencies and taking mental notes on whether certain players are right-handed or left-handed. Every bit of information gained in warm-ups can help a line judge position his or her eyes properly and increase the chance of making the right call, even when backpedaling to avoid players rushing after the ball. As any sports official prefers, Becker's work goes largely unnoticed throughout the tournament until there's a close call. Half the crowd is going to love you, half the crowd is going to hate you, he said. That's just the way it is. When the intensity picks up in those situations, Becker said he tunes out the noise and resets his focus. The fans return to their seats and he repositions himself at the center of the court. As the action resumes right in front of his eyes, it's hard to argue he doesn't have the best seat in the building. All right, let's now turn to the next front page story of Saturday's paper. Headline, witness saw victim advance towards defendant. Everything at a party at a friend's house was fine until Joseph Cruz and Carlos Aguirre started arguing about a gun. Quote, they just kept going back and forth over whose gun it was. Angel Williams, Cruz's cousin and a friend of Aguirre, testified Friday. Once Aguirre pulled out the gun, cocked it, and pointed it in the air, Williams said he grabbed him by the wrist to point the gun towards the floor while struggling with him for control over it. The gun fired twice, Williams said, before it fell from Aguirre's grasp. Cruz picked it up, and Aguirre advanced towards him. Quote, he starts making his way towards Joseph with his hands out. That's when Joseph shot him, Williams said. Aguirre was shot in the chest, he said. Cruz, age 20, of Sioux City, is standing trial in Woodbury County District Court on 2 counts of second-degree murder for the October 29th, 2022 shooting deaths of his cousin Anthony Williams, 19, and Aguirre, 21, in the early morning hours at 1421 West 5th Street. The charges are Class B felonies that carry a 50-year prison sentence. The defense said the shooting was in self-defense. Angel Williams, who is Anthony Williams' brother, was the first of 3 witnesses called by the defense after the state rested its case Thursday afternoon. In cross-examination, Angel Williams said Cruz, who was shot in the leg during the scuffle for the gun, had given Aguirre money to pay for the gun. Williams said he ran from the house after Aguirre was shot because he was scared. He said he did not know who his brother had been shot or who shot him. Prosecutors have said Cruz shot Aguirre in the back of the head and in the back because he would not give up the gun he had paid for. The two were drinking at a party with about a dozen friends when the shooting occurred. Previous witnesses said they saw Cruz and Aguirre argue, then punch each other before wrestling for control of the gun. Once Cruz gained control, he shot Aguirre. Anthony Williams was shot in the chest during the struggle. Aguirre died at the scene and Williams was pronounced dead at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. The prosecution called Sioux City Police Detective Michael Sitzman to rebut Angel Williams' testimony based on an interview Sitzman had with him on November 16th after prosecutors learned Williams would be called as a defense witness. Sitzman said he had believed his body camera was recording during the interview, but it was not, so there was no audio or video recording of the interview. Sitzman said Williams told him after Cruz shot Aguirre, he shot him in the back of the head as he walked out of the house. Defense attorney Michael Jacobs said in his cross-examination that Williams' statement during his interview with Sitzman contradicted everything witnesses had said during the course of the investigation. Quote, no witnesses have said anything about Joseph Cruz shooting the victim in the back of the head. Is that correct? Jacobs asked. Yes, that is correct, Sitzman said. Cruz's sister, Sierra Cruz, testified for the defense that her brother and Aguirre were best friends, but drinking could affect Aguirre's mood. Quote, he was very violent, aggressive, very bad-tempered, Sierra Cruz said of Aguirre's behavior when drinking. If things didn't go his way, he'd just flip out. The only thing that would calm him down was Joseph. Woodbury County Attorney James Loomis called three rebuttal witnesses, all friends of Aguirre, who said he would become emotional when drinking, sometimes crying and telling them how much he cared for them. None mentioned violent behavior. Witness testimony evidence concluded Friday, and the trial resumed Tuesday with final jury instructions and closing arguments before jurors receive the case to begin their deliberations. All right, let's turn to the page A3 of Saturday's paper for more local news. Headline, Sioux City's Festival of Trees raised $17,000. The Sioux City's 30th Annual Festival of Trees raised $17,905 for a Siouxland nonprofit organization during an auction Thursday night at the Ho-Chunk Center. This year's proceeds from the Festival of Trees went to support Siouxland Soldiers, a nonprofit organization founded by military families that has shipped more than 6,000 care packages, hosted more than 200 support events, and distributed more than 400,000 pounds of groceries to area enlisted members and veterans since 2007. Quote, the Festival of Trees has helped nearly 30 different nonprofits over the years, Festival of Trees organizer Tom Molstad said. Quote, we are happy to make this a merrier Christmas this year for support Siouxland Soldiers. The auction item that received the largest bid was a display decorated and designed by Winnevegas Casino Resort, which went for $1,225. Quote, Winnevegas has been a loyal participant at the Festival of Trees for many years, Molstad said. Unity Point Health St. Luke's and Morningside University have also been with us for a very long time. However, few organizations have been as consistent as West High School, which is the only Sioux City high school that has been a Festival of Trees participant for every one of the past 30 years. West Student Council were among the participants who picked a plaque for the 30 years of participation during Thursday night's event. According to Molstad, patriotism was out in full force when it came to holiday displays. All right, next headline. Legislative Forum addresses wastewater. From Sioux City. About 2 months after opening the doors on their new Gordon Drive location in Sioux City, the Siouxland Interstate Metropolitan Planning Council, or SIMPCO, played host Friday to policymakers and public officials from across the extended metro area. The latest SIMCO Tri-State Legislative Forum featured discussions on license plate cameras, water and wastewater infrastructure projects, local government, public notice requirements, and what issues legislators from Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota are hearing about most often. Quote, housing is the main issue, Iowa House District Representative Jacob Bossman, Republican of Sioux City, said. One potential solution, Bossman pointed, is pushing for the expansion of tax credits for workforce housing. According to the Iowa Economic Development Authority, to receive workforce housing tax credits, projects must meet one of the following criteria. Housing development located on a grayfield or brownfield site, repair or rehabilitation of dilapidated housing stock, upper story housing development, or new construction in a greenfield. Parentheses, grayfield projects are commercial retail sites that have been vacated. Brownfield are locations that have been faced pollution issues, and greenfields are entirely new projects built on undeveloped land. Fellow Iowa House Representative Bob Henderson, Republican of Sioux City, told forum attendees that he anticipated more work will need to be done to fix or rearrange some things on this bill related to property tax. This past May, Iowa legislators reached an agreement on a bill to address rising property taxes. In part, the law required any votes to approve local bonding that be held on general election ballots in November of even-numbered years. It would also require transparency measures for taxpayers. South Sioux City Police Chief Ed Mahon was the first official presenter for the forum and spoke on his force's use of Flock license plate cameras, which take high-resolution images of cars as they travel past and away from the camera. The use began as part of a pilot program. Mahon said the readings are stored and go away after 30 days if they are not needed for any official police work. Quote, of those reads, we use very few, Mahon said. To date, Mahon said the cameras have helped with recovering 11 stolen vehicles, served 6 arrest warrants, identifying 5 suspects in hit-and-run accidents, located 2 missing people, and arresting a commercial burglary suspect. During the question-and-answer portion of Mahon's presentation, Iowa House District 1 Representative J.D. Scholten, Democrat of Sioux City, asked Mahon about any concerns of the system being too instructive or 30 days being too long of a time frame to store data. Quote, we're not getting your faces. We're not setting it up in questionable places. We put it in traffic. That's what we use it for, Mahon said. Mahon was later questioned about who would have access to the local data and if there was a possibility that the maker of the software using the information. Quote, we have complete control with what we do, he said. water and wastewater treatment projects. Four separate folks talked about water and wastewater infrastructure improvement options for rural areas. Frank Grage, the Senior Manager for Business Development for Iowa American Water, which serves customers in 9 eastern Iowa communities, said recent estimates from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency show that the needs for water and wastewater infrastructure in Iowa total more than $9 billion. Parentheses, just in Sioux City, the council has discussed spending $470 million to rebuild the wastewater treatment plant and substantially raise sewer rates to cover the costs. Finding funding for such large-scale efforts, Grage said, is a continual process. Quote, there's no big lift. There are lots of little steps, he said. Three representatives from Simcoe, Aaron Berzina, Don Kimmel, and Corrine Erickson, touched on where to go for assistance programs. Berzina said three highlights are the community development block grants, state revolving loan funds, and USDA water and waste disposal loans and grants. Quote, aging infrastructure is a relentless issue in our communities. The need for financial assistance to complete vital projects such as water and sewer line replacements, water tower reconstruction, stormwater infrastructure in rural communities has become more pronounced, her presentation stated. Other matters to address. Two forum guests, Daniel Stadler with the Iowa League of Cities and the Susan Patterson Plank of the Gannett and USA Today Network, talked to those in attendance about public notice requirements. In April, the Iowa legislature majority altered a bill that would have excised a requirement for public entities to publish certain notices and papers. The changes are allowed for public notices to still be printed, but published for newspapers to publish notices on their websites and make them free to read. The legislation was not signed into law. The purpose and what comes next. At the start of the meeting, Simcoe Executive Director Michelle Bostelinos said the organization is a uniting force among local governments. For the coming year, Bostelinos said the force intends to maintain and modernize the transportation system, give continued support and development of alternative transportation, maintain and modernize wastewater facilities, have continued investment in natural gas and broadband, and support new housing incentives programs and encourage workforce housing. All right, let's now turn to page A4 of Saturday's paper. Headline, FBI announces Siouxland Safe Trails Task Force. From Sioux City, the FBI, during a news conference Thursday at its Sioux City office, officially announced the formation of the Siouxland Safe Trails Task Force, a joint cooperative effort with other law enforcement agencies to tackle violent crime and drug trafficking on tribal lands. The task force has informally been around for roughly a decade. However, the task force forced full-time officer from the Nebraska State Patrol is fully deputized in January. Special Agent in Charge Eugene Cowell said the FBI recognized a need for a partnership with state and local law enforcement agencies that would allow it to, quote, hone resources on tribal lands. The task force identifies, investigates, and prosecutes criminal enterprises and violent offenders. Quote, it's very challenging work. We can't do this by ourselves, Cowell said. The task force participants are Knox County Sheriff's Office, Nebraska State Patrol, Nebraska National Guard Counter-Drug Program, Walt Hill Police Department, Omaha Nation Law Enforcement Services, Thurston County Sheriff's Office, and the Dakota County Sheriff's Office. From January through November of this year, the task force has made more than 70 arrests in 48 different cases, recovered over 20 different weapons, located 5 children, and conducted 9 drug seizures. The FBI Sioux City Resident Agency was one of the 10 offices selected for Operation Not Forgotten, which seeks justice for women and children who have been victims of crimes in indigenous communities. Cowell noted that the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI are very aware and very focused on missing and murdering indigenous people. The operation, which took place in July and September and concentrated on investigations on the 3 Nebraska reservations, Winnebago, Omaha, and Santee Sioux, resulted in 3 arrests. Quote, it gives the federal people more boots on the ground and us even more resources, Knox County Sheriff Don Henry said on the task force. Quote, the communication is fantastic, he said. All right, let's now turn to the briefs section on page A4. Headline, Discovery Shop to host annual Santa Day. The Junior League of Sioux City will host its annual Santa Day from 10 a.m. to noon, December 9th at the Discovery Shop, 316 West 7th Street. The Discovery Shop will have special sales and promotions during the event. Kids will also receive a free Santa hat and a photo of Santa himself. A craft table will be set up to occupy kids as their parents shop. The Discovery Shop is the main fundraiser for the Junior League of Sioux City. Proceeds made in the shop from donations provided by Junior League and the community members go back into the community through various projects. For the past 102 years, the Junior League of Siouxland has reached out to women of all races, religions, and national origins who've demonstrated an interest in and commitment to volunteerism. For additional information on the Junior League of Sioux City or to request information, call 712-255-0072 or go to juniorleagueofsiouxcity.com. Headline: Man sentenced to federal prison for sex crimes. A Winnebago, Nebraska man was sentenced Thursday to 9 years in federal prison for sex abuse crimes. Alan Walker, 41, had pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court in Omaha to charges of abusive sexual contact with a minor and failing to register as a sex offender. Walker must serve 5 years on supervised release after completing his prison sentence. There is no parole in the federal system. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Walker entered a home in September 2022 and groped an 11-year-old child while it slept. The child woke up and reported Walker's actions to an adult who notified law enforcement. Walker was convicted in 2012 in Douglas County, Nebraska of child sexual assault and was required to register as a sex offender, but had failed to update his address for the registry beginning in September 2022. All right. Iowa News Recap from page A6. Headline: Care Facilities Added to Watch List. Subheadline: Deficiencies Lead to Spots on List of Nation's Worst. From Sioux City, 4 Iowa nursing homes, including one in Sioux City and one in Sergeant Bluff, have been added to the federal list of the nation's worst care facilities. Over the past 4 months, the homes have all been deemed eligible for inclusion on the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services national list of the special focus facilities. They join 6 other Iowa care facilities already deemed eligible for inclusion on the periodic list of nursing homes that have recurring quality of care problems. The 4 Iowa homes added to the list since July are Embassy Rehab and Care Center in Sergeant Bluff, Harmony West Des Moines, and the Ivy at Davenport, and Westwood Specialty Care in Sioux City. The 4 joined 6 other Iowa facilities long considered eligible for special focus status and increased oversight by regulators. Aspire of Grow Ryer, which has been eligible for 7 months, Dunlap Specialty Care, which has been eligible for 6 months, Genesis Senior Living in Des Moines, which has been eligible for 17 months, Griswold Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center, which has been eligible for 13 months, Iowa City Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center, which has been eligible for 7 months, and New London Specialty Care, which has been eligible for 10 months. Iowa has 2 care facilities that are officially designated as special focus facilities, and as a result, are operating under additional scrutiny and oversight by the government: Aspire of Growry and Arbor Court of Mount Pleasant. It's not clear why CMS has designated Aspire of Growy as both a special focus facility and a candidate for designation as a special focus facility. CMS officials were unable to address that question Wednesday. The 4 Iowa homes recently deemed eligible for inclusion on the federal list have a history of regulatory issues. Westwood Specialty Care of Sioux City. This 85-bed facility at 4201 Fieldcrest Drive has a 1-star rating from CMS for both overall quality and its inspection results. So far this year, it has been cited for 48 regulatory violations. Among the issues, in May, state inspectors alleged the home failed to complete a timely assessment and interventions for 5 of 18 residents whose care was reviewed. That failure, inspectors said, resulted in a death and several hospitalizations and visits to an emergency room for treatment. The home was also cited for failing to adequately respond to a resident's worsening foot injury that stemmed from an ingrown toenail. The lack of care allegedly led to an infection and the amputation of the resident's toes. Westwood Specialty Care is owned and managed by Iowa's largest nursing home chain, the tax-exempt nonprofit Care Initiatives, based in West Des Moines. According to tax records, CEO Michael Beal collected a total of $608,638 in compensation from Care Initiatives and its affiliates in 2021. Board members of the nonprofit were paid $134 an hour for their services. Embassy Rehab and Care Center of Sergeant Bluff. The 60-bed facility at 206 Port Neal Road has a 1-star rating from CMS for both inspection results and for quality measures. In May, state inspectors visited the facility in response to 4 complaints, all of which were substantiated, and cited the facility for 40 state and federal violations, an unusually high number. Among the violations, a resident complained that when he told a male aide that the water in the shower was too hot, the aide turned the water to ice cold. The resident responded by telling the Filipino aide to go back to the jungle, at which point the aide allegedly placed his hand over the resident's mouth and nose while pressing the resident's neck down until the water from the shower went up the resident's nose. The resident said he tried to yell for help but could not. The business is owned by a for-profit entity called Kismet Sucks SUX LLC and an affiliate, Lantis Enterprises. The individuals who have a significant ownership stake in the business include Cammy, Mary, and Travis Lantis. The next home is Harmony West of Des Moines. This 120-bed facility has a one-star rating from CMS for overall quality and has been cited for 53 violations over the course of 5 inspections this year. Among the issues, the home was alleged to have neglected over a period of several days a resident's complaint related to an apparent bowel obstruction that eventually led to fissures and to feces being discharged through her vagina. A nurse told inspectors the woman had complained of extreme pain. Quote, she was screaming and you could hear her down the hall, the nurse told inspectors. She was saying her butt is on fire. It took an hour and a half before I got the order to send her to the ER. At the hospital, the woman was diagnosed with septic shock, a life-threatening infection, and gangrene in the area surrounding her genitals. After 2 surgeries, the resident died. CMS reports that it has no ownership information available on Harmony West. Real estate records indicate the property is currently owned by Manor Care Health Services. The Ivy at Davenport. This 75-bed facility has a 1-star rating from CMS for both overall quality and its inspection results. So far this year, it has been cited for 38 regulatory violations. Among the issues, earlier this year, state inspectors published a 220-page report documenting 35 state and federal violations, including rodents, medication errors, illicit drug use, and other problems. A nurse who was on the home's payroll told inspectors staffing levels were, quote, absolutely horrible, and that she could not express how bad it was. The home had failed to maintain clean floors, empty trash, and clean resident equipment, inspectors said, leaving some areas of the facility with strong odors smelling of urine, body odor, and garbage. The home also failed to provide bed sheets or pillowcases to some of the residents, leaving them in beds that had no sheets. One resident had no nightstand, so their food was placed directly on the floor. A nurse told inspectors rodents were seen recently throughout the hallways in the resident rooms. The Ivy at Davenport is managed by Ivy Healthcare of Surfside, Florida. The company's president and CEO, Ryan Cohn, is part owner of the facility and told the Iowa Capital Dispatch last year that his top priority is her residents' health and well-being, quote. He said the Davenport's facility's workers and the love they have for every resident at the center is unsurpassable, end quote. Quote, homes eligible for added oversight don't receive it. The Federal Special Focus Facilities list is updated monthly by CMS and includes homes deemed by the agency to have a history of serious quality issues. Nationally, there are 88 nursing facilities on the list, with 1 or 2 slots filled by each state. The homes are enrolled in a special program intended to stimulate improvements in their quality of care through increased regulatory oversight. Because the number of special focus facilities, even those that have earned CMS's lowest ratings for quality, can't be named a special focus facility until other homes in that same state shut down or improve and, quote, graduate from the program. That's a process that can take 4 years or more. As a result, there are several homes in each state that are designated as eligible for special focus status due to their ongoing quality of care issues, but they are unable to benefit from actual enrollment in the program. Iowa generally has 10 nursing homes on the list of eligible facilities. Currently, the only Iowa home listed as having graduated from the program after a sustained period of improving is Touchstone Healthcare Community in Sioux City. However, Touchstone's graduation appears to coincide with the home's closing in July of 2022 amid ongoing quality of care issues. In fact, Touchstone was only added to CMS's special focus list 6 days after it closed and the last of its residents was moved out. Prior to that, Touchstone has been on the list for almost 4 years before graduating. Typically, all of the homes that are deemed eligible for special focus designation have about twice the average number of violations cited by state inspectors. They have more serious problems than most other nursing homes, including harm or injury to residents, and they have established a pattern of serious problems that has persisted over a long period of time. All right, next story, page A6. Top publishers, authors sue over Iowa book ban. Penguin Random House, the Iowa State Education Association, and some best-selling authors are suing over a new state law that bans books of sexual content from public school libraries, arguing the law violates First Amendment free speech rights. The publishing giant filed a lawsuit in federal court on Thursday, naming Iowa State Board of Education President John Robbins, Iowa State Department of Education Director Mackenzie Snow, and a number of local school districts and officials as defendants. Best-selling authors include John Green, Jody Peacott, and Melinda Lowe are named as plaintiffs in the lawsuit. An anonymous high school student and their parent, along with three teachers, also joined the lawsuit. The lawsuit argues that the restrictions on books imposed by Senate File 496 are overbroad and an unconstitutional restriction on speech and the right to receive information. The law, passed by Republican lawmakers this year and signed into law by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, prohibits books that include depictions or descriptions or depictions of any of a list of defined sex acts from public school libraries. The law includes several other provisions, including a ban on teaching about gender and sexuality before seventh grade, a requirement that schools inform parents if a student asks to be referred to by a different name or set of gender pronouns, and other requirements intended to expand transparency of public schools. Brenda Zahner, director of ISEA's bargaining group in Siouxland, said the bill strips teachers of their ability to determine what books are appropriate for their classrooms and their students. Quote, "We believe that the free exchange of ideas is a fundamental right in America and that book bans prevent that," Zahner said Thursday. "We think that students have a right to access information that is important to them regardless of their race or sexual orientation." It is the second lawsuit against the law filed this week. Iowa Safe Schools, an LGBTQ advocacy organization, along with the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, filed a separate lawsuit challenging the law on Tuesday. What does the lawsuit against Iowa's book ban argue? The new lawsuit seeks to strike down only the portion of the law that restricts books in school libraries, while the ACLU lawsuit seeks to strike down the entire law. The lawsuit argues the, quote, age-appropriate prohibition on descriptions or depictions of sex acts goes beyond prohibiting obscene or pornographic books, saying it is an overbroad prohibition that violates students' First Amendment right to receive information. All right, let's now transition to the opinion section of the Saturday paper to get some local Siouxland voices. And we've got two letters to the editor. The first one is titled, "Don't Understand the Support for Trump, GOP. And the letter writer writes, "I struggle to understand how anyone can support Donald J. Trump or the Republican Party. They have no platform, nor have they passed any meaningful legislation while they were in power for 4 years. If you're unhappy with Biden, the Democrats, and the things they've done for the people, then you should vote for Republicans. The Republicans have, again, no platform or done anything for the people. So when you vote for Republicans, here's what you get. The reorganization of the FBI, the world's premier law enforcement agency, the elimination of the Justice Department, the world's premier legal entity for equal justice for all U.S. citizens, the repeal of Obamacare with no replacement, the reduction of taxes for the super rich, the elimination of the CDC, the world's premier research laboratory, the elimination of all foreign aid to all nations, the deportation of 10 million illegal immigrants without due process, use U.S. military on U.S. soil to protect U.S. border, the elimination of all U.S. general officers and military who do not swear allegiance to Trump, the suspension of the Constitution of the United States of America, the withdrawal from NATO and other military commitments. The list goes on and on. If Trump is elected or steals the next election, every American's life will change. Once the Rubicon is crossed, there is no turning back, and the American dream experiment will be once one more empire to fall into the dustbin of history, having collapsed from within." Signed, John Stetson of Sioux City. The next letter writer has a letter titled, "It's Time to Modernize Iowa's Credit Union Act." The letter writer writes, "The 1920s marked a period of significant change, and in 1925, the Iowa legislature enacted the Iowa Credit Union Act to enhance Iowans' access to affordable financial services. Nearly a century later, it is crucial to revisit this act so Iowa credit unions can adapt to the current times. Across various industries, business models have evolved today to stay competitive, and the financial sector is no exception. Decades ago, banks faced restrictions such as being barred from the insurance business, operating branches across state lines, and imposing surcharges on ATM machines. Recognizing the necessity for updates, policymakers made changes to banking laws to help the industry better evolve. Now, in the present time, the Iowa Banking Act recently received significant updates in the 2022 legislative session. A bill aimed at updating the Iowa Credit Union Act passed the House in 2023 with an 86-3 vote, but stalled in the Senate due to opposition from the banking industry. Iowa thrives when both banks and credit unions are strong and vital. The 1.4 million Iowans relying on credit unions expect them to be secure, stable, and modern. Similar to the changes the banking industry received over the years, Iowa credit unions must undergo a similar transformation to evolve. Iowa needs a financial landscape where both banks and credit unions flourish. Resistance to updating the credit union's code hinders progress. Let's advocate for the modernization of the Iowa Credit Union Act, ensuring the continued vitality of Iowa credit unions. All right. Well, friends, I think that kind of brings our time together for a wrap. So I hope you all have a wonderful time as we move now into December, the last month of 2023. It's hard to believe we're already here. And I hope you all have a wonderful day. Take care of yourself, and if you can, someone else. Bye-bye.